Thank you, Angela, and welcome to our special broadcast celebrating the opening of the 2016 Oregon Bach Festival here on KLCC 89.7 NPR for Oregonians. I'm Eric Allen, KLCC Arts, Music, and Culture host, and with me tonight is co-host Janelle McCoy, the new executive director of the Oregon Bach Festival. Welcome, Janelle.
Thank you, and thanks for having me. And I'd also like to thank KLCC for putting this on for us tonight.
And this festival runs this year from June 23rd, this Thursday, through Sunday, July 10th. And tonight we'll celebrate all of that with an hour's live broadcast featuring music from the Baroque violin duo of Alice Blankenship and Allison Luthmers-Tessier. So welcome to KLCC. Thank you both for being here as well.
And thank you for having us.
Well, Janelle, this is your first year at the helm of the Oregon Bach Festival after arriving from Philadelphia with both a background as an arts administrator and as a mezzo-soprano. What kind of goals and vision do you bring for this festival's future?
Well, I work in partnership with our artistic director, Matthew Halls, and I think that, you know, Matthew's 3 years in, this will be his third festival, as our artistic director, which is very exciting, and he's just, when you watch Matthew's career, he's just on the climb. He's conducting an every major orchestra, every major city in the world. So I am so blessed to have him as my partner in crime here at the Oregon Bach Festival. And, you know, so what Matthew and I are looking for in the future, I mean, we just broke ground last Friday on Berwick Hall, thanks to the generous donations of the Berwick family and the Tyksons. We will have a permanent residence on the university campus, the University of Oregon campus. And for 47 years, we've been a roving band of musicians, and now we have a real home. And so that's going to bring so much excitement and strategic thinking to the festival. We'll be engaging with the community in ways that we've never been able to. That means perhaps even year-round. And what we're doing is creating a cultural corridor over there on 18th Street, connecting Central Lutheran, which is often a venue that we use during the festival, to the School of Music and Dance. And we'll have a wonderful public face right there on 18th, so no one will forget about the Bach Festival all year round, and we look forward to launching that soon. I mean, we're also looking at programming that will engage the community, engage the university. We are being very forward-thinking. We have Bach in our Bach Festival name, but that doesn't mean we're exclusively Bach. We look at our name as a charter to explore composers that were inspired by Bach as well, so that means we run the gamut between early music and more contemporary composers. And I think that you'll see that reflected in our programming as well.
We'll talk more about how that manifests in this year's program later in this hour. But right now, I'd like to get to a little bit of music. And the duo standing here next to us, Alice Blankenship and Allison Luthmers-Tessier, have known each other a long time. There was a student-teacher relationship once upon a time. And apparently at about 15 years old, Allie was introduced to the Baroque violin by Alice. And now Allie has gone on to move to Sweden, play all over Europe, and is back in her hometown of Eugene. So thank you for both joining us here. And I believe we're going to begin with a little bit of a musical conversation that involves Bach. Alice, why don't you talk about why this is a conversation that we're about to have?
This music represents to us our long-distance friendship. Allie lives in Sweden, and I live in Eugene, Oregon. And this was a winter filled with a few conversations that included deep melancholy because of the aging and lives, wonderful lives of my parents. But they've had a hard year, and I often spoke with Allie. And so I often had the sad and sorrowful thing to say, and Allie always answered me with brilliance and compassion and optimism. And so we are beginning tonight with the adagio from the Bach G minor sonata and being answered by Allie with the preludio from the E minor partita, a major partita of Bach.
Thank you.
A Little Conversation in Bach in the Selco Performance Hall of the KLCC Studios, Ellie Luthmers, TCA, following Alice Blankenship there. They'll perform as a Baroque duo in the Holt Center lobby as part of the Bach Festival on Tuesday, June 28th at 1 p.m., as well as they're performing now. Well, being a Baroque duo means Baroque instruments as well as Baroque music, and there is a difference in the strings and other aspects of the instruments. Do you want to describe a little bit what makes these instruments Baroque?
I think for me, the main difference is actually in the way that I hold the instrument. Both of us actually, you can play it different ways, but because we don't have all this equipment, like the modern instrument, to hold on the shoulder and on the chin, we play so-called chin-off, so the violin's a bit more free. And for me, it allows me to express the dance-like quality of a lot of this music a bit more freely. So I would say that's one big difference.
And the technical aspects of the instrument itself are that we are playing with raw gut strings, a more delicate bridge and tailpiece. Our instruments are both period instruments. They're both from the 18th century. And our bows are also 18th century bows. So we have bows that resemble what maybe Corelli would have used in his time around 1710, and certainly Bach's violinists in Leipzig and other places would have had bows similar to ours. And what this conjures up is just a little bit different world of sound. For me, the raw gut strings and the Baroque bow sound like velvet and chocolate and and sometimes persnickety things like, you know, the reeds sticking out of a pond or something. It's got something that Monica Huggett likes to call chiff. They're chiffier, and but they're also very warm, and so it opens up a little different sound world.
And Janelle, it seems like there is a focus on period instruments within the Bach Festival that's perhaps increasing. Why are period instruments important to the Bach Festival here?
Well, I think that goes to our artistic director, Matthew Halls, his education. I mean, he was brought through something very similar to that in Europe, and something that he would very much like to bring to this country. What we do at the Bach Festival, with our emphasis on historically informed performance, it's not that there aren't other period groups out there, but we also have the Berwick Academy, which draws students from all over the world who can emphasize and really do a deep dive study into some of the qualities that Alice and Allie are talking about, and have that conversation looking backwards into trying to recreate, you know, what was Bach doing in Leipzig, for example? What was the quality of the instrument in the Thomaskirche, for example? You know, how would they have matched that? And it's a great discussion among the musicians to arrive at how are we going to play this piece of music with that perspective.
And as we move forward into the music this evening, I believe we are traveling to Italy next, correct?
We are. We are actually going to play a ricercare. And a ricercare was a form of music that developed out of church music when the organist would be preparing the choir to sing and sort of giving them their pitches, but also the key of the piece, or a lute player would be tuning his strings. And that little bit of sort of plucking around or noodling around eventually came to have its own identity as an instrumental piece called a ricercare, so meaning ricercare, to search for or to seek out. So we're sort of seeking out the intonation of the piece. And then it became a form of its own, and we're going to play the this is the earliest form of instrumental music that used imitative counterpoint. So we're going way back in time now. This is a ricercare from 1588. By Guami.
Francesco Guami didn't write that much instrumental music, But that seems to have lasted. What was it about that music that you think makes it transcends the centuries?
I would say the conversational aspect, because you can really hear how the two instruments are interacting, mm-hmm. and we will follow along with that sort of theme in the music that's coming later also, with the Telemann and the...
And is there a musical connection that you feel between Gwami and Thomas Morley, the English composer that we're about to hear?
I am speculating. But there was a whole generation of Italians who moved to England in the period of Henry VIII. They were employed there. They found better employment there. I think there was trouble in Italy, probably. But we know lots of them relocated there and had a profound influence on English music. And so we now turn to English music that clearly inherits this idea of imitative counterpoint. This is Lamento by Thomas Morley.
Thomas Morley's Lamento, performed live by Alice Blankenship and Ali Luthmers-Tessier, live in the KLCC studios, helping us to kick off the 2016 Oregon Bach Festival in the special broadcast tonight. Morley was also rumored to have collaborated with Shakespeare, but I guess we can't really prove that either, can we? Sometimes these things are best left to the dusts of history, I think. The speculation is so much fun. But... leaving behind more paperwork, Telemann the author of perhaps 3,000 known compositions, one of the most prolific musicians of his era. So why do you think his compositional voice is so lasting? Since
Well, we can say many things about Telemann, but what we'd like to say tonight is that we feel that this this idea of imitative counterpoint, the Recherkar that started, you know, 130 years before Telemann wrote the piece we're going to play now, is sort of brought to a climactic point of fine craftsmanship and artistry in the hands of Telemann. So you've heard the, you know, simpler lines just now, and we promise you we're not going to stay morose all evening, but we have another absolutely gorgeous gorgeous sonata to play for you. It's two movements, so there's a largo and an allegro, and it's in E minor.
Thank you.
Largo and Allegro from Telemann's Sonata No. 4 in E minor, live in the KLCC studios from Alice Blankenship and Ali Luthmers Tessier, who will perform in the Holt Center lobby as part of the Oregon Bach Festival in a free performance on Tuesday, June 28th at 1 p.m. You're listening to a special broadcast of the kickoff of the Oregon Bach Festival here on KLCC NPR for Oregonians on KLCC Eugene 89.7, KLCO Newport 90.5, KLFR Reedsport 89.1, and at 88.1 KMPQ Roseburg, KLFO Florence, and KLBR Bend. Also streaming online at klcc.org. KLCC is a service of Lane Community College. We'll be going to Sweden in just a few minutes, but before we do so, I want to return to my co-host Janelle McCoy here, the executive director of the Oregon Bach Festival, to talk about a few other highlights of this year's festival, and one of those is certainly a commission from the great Scottish composer Sir James McMillan. How did it come about that this commission happened?
I think that was through the foresight of our former executive director, John Evans, several years ago. I mean, he had a relationship with James McMillan, and we were fortunate enough to encourage Mr. McMillan to write a piece for us. He's a world-renowned composer, and with a very busy desk, and we were very fortunate to get on his list of organizations for which he would write. And so we're really pleased to be pairing that also with the Bach Magnificat, and that'll be on July 2nd, in fact, at the Holt Center at 7:30.
Another highlight is that very much at the end of the modern spectrum, a very different thing. The Punch Brothers, with Chris Thiele, who's known for his work in the bluegrass band Nickel Creek, also a MacArthur Foundation Genius Grant recipient, who's taking over for Garrison Keillor as the host of A Prairie Home Companion. Other than that, he doesn't know how to do anything. How do the Punch Brothers fit into this vision?
Well, I think it goes back to really seeing, what is inspired by Bach. I mean, I call them the Globetrotters of classical music, because when you hear them play, it's clear the virtuosic nature of their playing and their classical backgrounds, but they're using bluegrass to express themselves, and it's just full of whimsy and dance and movement and jokes, too, which you might not expect, but they're just that talented to be able to let you in on the secret through the music that they're playing. It's going to be a real treat. That one's on July 5th, in fact, also at the Holt Center.
And you've got Bach's Mass in B minor, a classic, going there.
In fact, yes, that's our opening night on the 23rd. That's this Thursday, and it is selling like hotcakes. So you do not want to wait to buy your ticket, because we really have such a huge audience and community response to that. But even prior to the Bach B minor, which will be in a historically informed performance, we're having an opening celebration. I am relatively new to Eugene, but I hear that the Eugene celebration is no more. So we're trying to recreate that Eugene celebration as part of our opening night. So you'll see food trucks, brass band, you'll have a 300-voice youth choir. I mean, it's really full of that festive nature and the way that we want to kick off the Bach Festival this year. And I want to go back to something that was said earlier, too, just thinking about the Bach B minor, being a part of the historically informed performance that Matthew so desires. You know, when I hear period instruments, I think of these are, for example, the instruments that you're hearing tonight are from the 18th century, and I think about the craftsmanship that would have been, that would have gone into making those instruments, those gut strings. It's artisanal in a sense. You know, these instruments are just amazing instruments, and I think it comes across when you're listening to that music, how authentic and genuine that music is. And being heard, we can never fully recreate what Bach intended or any of the composers that we're playing in that manner, but we can get closer to standing in that church, maybe where it was first heard, and I think that's important. It takes us on a musical journey.
We can also get closer to how difficult it was to stay in tune. But the musical journey now takes us to Sweden, I believe, and Eric Sahlström. He is a proponent of the nyckelharpa, a guy who refined it, brought it into being. It's a keyed violin. Ali, as a Swedish resident, perhaps you can tell us a little bit more about Eric Sahlström and the nyckelharpa and what we're about to hear.
Well, I think Erik Sällström was one of the most well-known of the nickel harpa players earlier in the 20th century. And this tune I found actually on a historical recording of him and another nickel harpa player playing together, and learned it off of that recording. And the nickel harpa, if you haven't seen it, it's a really funky looking instrument. It looks really awkward the way you hold it, and it has this kind of short, stubby bow that you hold at an angle, sort of pointing towards your face. And it has all these really cool looking keys. And actually, I think it was an instrument that was used sort of all over Europe, all the way down to Germany. And so it's had quite a revival in the last few years in Sweden and also in the US, I think. So this is a really cool tune. And
It's called
Hardrevet, which I don't think means anything. It's just...
But it's fun to say. Speaking of tuning, we have to have a little moment here. In Baroque orchestras, we like to joke that we tune for about 20 minutes and then we play out of tune for the next half hour.
To Sweden there. Well, Ellie, it must be true that as you listen to Swedish folk music and classical music, it provides different perspectives and a relationship that you see between them. Is that
Absolutely,
true?
Absolutely, yes.
So can you describe the relationship you see between Baroque classical music and Swedish folk music?
I would say probably the first thing is the connection with dance and how strongly dance is a component in both of these types of music. Not only for the imagination of the player, but also for the actual physicality of the rhythm. The way that we use rhythm in Baroque music is sort of based on these dances and on the way that it feels to dance and sort of embodying rhythm more than counting it or dividing it in space, sort of in your mind. Probably all of the folk musicians that I've met and worked with in Sweden are actually also dancers. So there's much more of a direct connection, I think, in the folk music world, but also in the early music world, people tend to be interested and sort of have an idea of what the dances are, and that helps to feel the piece. And the other connection that I really like to focus on is, I think, from observing folk musicians working, oftentimes when they play a concert, they're sort of doing what they always do. They jam, they try things out, they experiment and improvise. And then when the concert comes, there just happens to be an audience there. But they're sort of doing what they always do. So it's like real life just continuing. Whereas sometimes as classical musicians, we can focus so much on sort of the performance as product. Whereas I feel it's really liberating to sort of take that kind of approach and just experiment and leave yourself open to new ideas in the performance as well.
So does that come in then to inform something like your performance of the Bach Partita No. 3?
Absolutely, yes.
And can you give us an example of that musically?
Yes. So these are the minuets from the Bach E major partita.
Luthmer's Tessier live with Bach Partita number 3 in A major, minuets 1 and 2. So what then is the connection back to traditional Swedish music from Bach, if that's where we're going next?
Yes. Well, this one is just for the fun of it. I think everyone in the audience, both here and in the listening audience out in the world, can feel the 1, 2, 3 of Ali's minuets. And so we have this very simple version of 1, 2, 3. You know, it's not hard to feel. It's not hard to count. You can tap your foot to it. But Bach took that simple minuet and created a masterpiece of polyphony, really. You know, that could be three violins playing that piece together. And so the fun thing, the thing that Ali and I love about Swedish, traditional Swedish folk music like the polska, is that it's not such an easy to count three, and it's actually very challenging for us classical musicians. And so we thought it would be fun for you to try tapping your foot to this one, because in this music we count more like 1-3-1-3-1-3-1. 3-1.
We'd better not practice for too long.
So can you, Ali says the name so nicely, can you introduce?
This is Farmors Brud Polska, which is grandmother's bridal Polska, or wedding Polska.
And followed closely by...
Polska after Johan Jakob Brun, I think.
Yeah.
You've taken us to Sweden. You've taken us to the year 1585, Italy, all over the European continent to the 20th century. Well, no journey would really be complete without going to imaginary lands as well, I figure. So how does Telemann's Gulliver Suite relate to Gulliver's Travels and Jonathan Swift? Where's the connection?
Well, Jonathan Swift's novel was apparently just absorbed, digested, and gobbled up by all of Europe within 2 years of its publication. And within 2 years of its publication, Telemann had written his Gulliver Suite, portraying some of the foibles of human nature and the adventures of Gulliver in this music. So we have an entry dance. And unlike the very suave and extremely refined Telemann you heard earlier, we hear a little bit different personality in this piece. So we have a spirited introduction. We have the Lilliput Chacon. So these are the little people. They're the six-inch people. And Telemann wrote this piece in extremely funny notation with like a million beams. They're like 128th notes, 64th notes. And then we have the giant people's jig. And the giant people's jig is written, it's a jig, you know, a happy dance, right? Upbeat, it's written all in whole notes. So he was making his own little notational musical jokes. We also have the reverie of the Lapuchians, and these are the people who are constantly dreaming, and then they're only awakened now and then by a loud and kind of alarming alarm clock. And last of all, we have a dual dance where there's the lure of the elegant and noble Hymenimims. I can't really say this. Hymenimims, it's kind of a made-up name. Anyway, they're horse people, and they're noble, and they are sort of being interrupted by the Yahoos.
Aren't we all?
Furious. Yahoos. And that is how the piece ends.
Thank you.
Telemann's Gulliver's Suite. Alice Blankenship and Allie Luthmers Tessier. You can find them live at the Hult Center in a free show in the lobby on Tuesday, June 28th at 1 p.m. Before we turn to the final piece, I want to turn back to Janelle McCoy, the executive director of the Oregon Bach Festival here, my co-host tonight. The theme of this festival is Take the Journey. So you are taking a new journey as the director of this festival. Where do you want this journey to go for the audience and for the festival in years ahead?
Well, as I mentioned earlier, I think that we're really at a crossroads of very exciting opportunities for the Bach Festival, given that we'll have a new home soon, which will be opening hopefully this time next year. The way that we will interact with the public and the community to provide engagement, not just for our immediate community, but also beyond, and being able to extend that brand internationally, we're already known, but taking the university along with us and really being a good partner in that regard, it's a very special time for the Bach Festival, and I'm looking forward to taking you all along on that journey with me as we progress for the next half century and beyond. Hopefully, I'm around for the next half century. I don't know. That might be a stretch.
You might want to retire by then. Just saying. But yeah. Thank you for taking the journey with us tonight and for being here and being part of the community now.
Thank you. Thanks. And I'd also like to say a special thank you to Alice and Allie tonight. It's such a pleasure to hear you up close and personal, and for our studio audience as well. Thank you for being here tonight, too.
We will indeed close with a modern piece written by somebody who's been here in the KLCC studios. Olav Johansson, part of the great Swedish band Vessen. Still the tallest band I've ever met. They make an excellent volleyball team, but they're a good band, too. So, Allie, why don't you introduce Olav and the piece that you'll finish with?
Yeah. This piece is called Harppolska, and Olav Johansson wrote it for himself and a wonderful harp player whose name I can't remember right now. But it's one of my favorite tunes, and we were talking a bit about the one and the three, feeling the one and the three in the Polska earlier. And in this piece, it's almost impossible to find it because it's a bit more of a performance type of piece rather than necessarily a dance piece. But you can still feel the dance elements of it. And it's one of my favorites. So. Thank you.
Alice Blankenship, Allie Luthmer, Stacey, thank you again for performing. We really appreciate you being here.
Thank you for having us.
That does conclude our special broadcast here in the Selco Performance Hall of the KLCC Studios, celebrating the opening of the 2016 Oregon Bach Festival, which runs from Thursday, June 23rd through Sunday, July 10th. More information online at OregonBachFestival.com. Thanks behind the scenes tonight to Denny Kahn on sound, Don Hine on additional production, Cheryl Crumbly at KLCC for hospitality, Michael Anderson, Dave Gowdy, everybody at the Oregon Bach Festival behind the scenes as well, KLCC staff and volunteers, and of course, our studio audience and listeners. For KLCC, I'm Eric Allen. The Heartwood Hotel is next with Sina Kraft.